Support for KCRW Podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers, as well as our partner, AOL Music. Log in to AOLmusic.com for exclusive live performances, videos, and downloads, as well as 200 radio stations featuring XM.
Join KCRW and get free frequent flyer miles, free music, free magazines. Check out kcrw.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome to DNA, Design and Architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. On today's show, we'll talk about how energy prices and worries about the environment are affecting the way people live in the Southland. And later in the show, we'll hear from Cesar Pelli, architect of the new Segerstrom Concert Hall in Orange County. With rising gas prices and choking traffic, cycling to work, not just for recreation, is on the rise, even in Los Angeles. The LA County Bicycle Coalition says thousands of people pedal to work each day, and their way is paved by bike routes and bike stations that are expanding across the region. But if you want to cycle on the roads here, what do you need to know? There's been buzz about folding bikes, single-gear bikes, hybrid bikes, and more and more. Jim Cadenhead is a mechanic in the testing department of Bicycling magazine, and he's a co-founder with TJ Flexer of Orange 20. That's a new bike shop on Heliotrope Drive that caters to commuter cyclists. I visited them there as they were setting up their store for a September opening. So, Jim, are there innovations in bike design that you can tell us about?
There are a lot of innovations in bicycle design. However, bicycles are a lot like computers. What we're seeing is the majority of the crazy innovations are happening with extremely expensive bicycles. You have different types of engineers that are building extremely radical designs.
Radical in what way?
Well, completely different shapes. We're seeing different shapes of tubing. We're seeing different types of materials being used in the tubing. So you no longer have a bicycle that looks like a bunch of triangles that we're used to.
Looks like a bunch of triangles. Aren't they circles? Aren't they wheels?
Yes, but I mean in terms of the frame of the bicycle, it's generally a diamond shape, and it consists of two triangles. And that now we're starting to move away from that, and we're seeing all different types of rounded shapes, ovals. We're seeing tubes that are completely taken out in favor of strength-to-weight ratios.
And what kind of materials are we talking about?
We are talking about plastic resin, basically woven together, carbon fiber. Now, this is an extremely strong, but it is also an extremely supple material. So it has the ability to soak up some of the bumps, but also it can transmit energy extremely well.
And this would be much lighter than the old metal frame bikes?
These are extremely light. The strength-to-weight ratio on carbon fiber is just completely phenomenal.
So you say that these shapes, these circles, ovals, instead of diamonds, triangles, you say these are going to start filtering down to the affordable bike.
It's not going to be something that you're going to see in the next couple of years, but it is going to be happening. As these developments are becoming easier to produce, then what we're seeing is we're seeing them on more and more different types of bikes. In fact, some of the materials we're even seeing on bikes that start around $600 these days.
So if I want to ride to work, and I want a bike that's comfortable, I don't necessarily want to be on a racing bike with a crossbar. I don't necessarily need a bike that can get me over, you know, the canyons on rocky terrain. What kind of bike might you recommend? I just want to get from A to B within the city.
Well, there are two types of bikes that I can definitely point you towards. We're seeing a rise in flat bar road bikes, which these bicycles definitely are designed to gobble up miles. The second type is something that people refer to these days as a comfort bike. The comfort bike is designed to eat up the bumps more than the miles. Comfort bikes are the old hybrids, the ones with taller wheels than mountain bikes, wider tires than road bikes, and an extremely laid-back geometry. Laid-back geometry is designed to help you sit upright and to enjoy your experience more.
Now, one of the reasons why people might not want to cycle to and from work, say, is what clothes do they wear? What about, you know, hygiene? People get sweaty, they get hot, they get dirty, there might not be a shower. Are you thinking about those kind of LA kind of considerations as well, when as part of opening this store?
We can't gear ourselves toward commuter cyclists without viewing the overall picture. So one of the things that we're specializing in are bags that you can either carry on your back or carry on racks that will keep everything that you have dry. So that includes your change of clothes for work.
And what about for women? Are you going to have sort of clothing that you can ride and wear when you're at work?
Women are probably one of the most underrepresented fields in this market. So what we are doing is we are also going to be specializing in parts, not only parts specific for women, but also clothing specific for women. So yes, we will have wraparound skirts that are easy to take on and off, and we will also have wraparound skirts with padded shorts and those kinds of clothes that really cater to women's needs.
And are there any kind of, I suppose, fabrics that cyclists might, or commuter cyclists might choose, I guess, for making them less sweaty?
Well, that's kind of a hard one. Technically, Lycra is known to be one of the more sweat-absorbent types of fabric, and part of the reason that so many cyclists use it is because it not only does it wick the sweat off of your body, but it also dries quick. So that is an extremely good choice. However, if you leave it sitting around in 100-degree weather outside after you've sweated in it, it's not going to smell very good.
Just to wrap up, is there anything that you want to add in terms of recommendations for making one's commuter bike ride better, safer, more comfortable, and so on?
I've got a ton of recommendations, but probably the most important one is to remember to have fun, because once you forget to do that, then you start catching yourself up in the trappings of the anger that had you initially in your car. So, have fun.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
Every month on DNA, I ask someone to talk about their favorite building in Los Angeles. This month, I thought it would be interesting to hear about a building as seen from a bike. My guest is Alex Ameri. He's a graduate of SIARC School of Architecture, and he's the creator of RideArc.
So, Alex, start by telling us about RideArc. What is it?
It's a bunch of people having fun on their bikes. Once a month, we get together with a themed ride. It happens on the first Friday of every month. And we deal with a theme in Los Angeles that kind of ties architecture in the social sense, not just necessarily the building sense.
So do you look at buildings differently when you're on a bike?
Yes, actually. Being on a bicycle is probably the best way to get to know your city and community. When you're inside a car, you're either moving at such a quick pace or you're essentially locked inside a cage. When you're walking, there's some apprehension about, you know, somebody coming up to you, catching you off guard, or you're also moving too slow. On a bicycle, you're able to move at a good, healthy pace while engaging with your community, getting to know your neighborhoods, noticing things you wouldn't notice when you're in the car because you're paying attention to too many traffic issues. It's the perfect way to get to know your city and have a great time.
From your perspective as someone who's getting to know your community in this way from the bicycle, is there anything that stands out to you as a favorite building or favorite place?
I'd have to say the Watts Towers is actually my favorite place in Los Angeles, and it kind of exemplifies what RideArc is about. It designed by Simon Rodia, it was essentially a beautiful structure. It's part of the community, and it was designed by somebody who's not an architect. And RideArc itself, myself and my co-founders, we're architects. However, the whole purpose is to bring about architecture is not just for people who study architecture or are in academia. It's for the larger community, and there should be a way to engage in that and understand it. And it's one gem in a city that's full of amazing, beautiful discoveries and gems.
For anybody who might not know Watts Towers, just describe it.
Watts Towers is located just off of 107th Street and I believe Willowbrook. I could be wrong there. It's in the residential district of Watts, and they are several towers that are designed from rail ties and steel structures that tower in the sky. It's kind of a bit Gaudi-esque with a lot of mosaic and interpretation patterns. They're incredibly strong, so strong that engineers at Berkeley could not even figure out how they are built.
Gaudí-esque being inspired by the Barcelona architect, right. Gaudí, who used ceramics to decorate buildings. And so it's this frame, isn't it? It's like a skeletal frame that's covered in ceramics. And it's so beautiful. And it sort of soars up out of the landscape in Watts. And he did it as a labor of love, didn't he, Simon Rodet? It was just sort of a passion that kept him going for, what, decades, I think.
Yeah, he did it out of a labor of love with no actual drawings or specific intention for what it will be. He just designed it because he felt like doing it. And that is actually what it is like to live in Los Angeles. At a certain point, if you want to express yourself and be engaged with the community, you should do what you love to do, and other people will engage with you. And that's how Los Angeles works.
Now, I think that when you visit places like Watts Towers, you do so at a time of day that people might not normally do so. Talk about that.
Yeah, when we do our bike rides, we do them in the night. We usually start around 9:30 and we end around midnight. It's probably the best time to do a bicycle ride in Los Angeles because the evening air is a lot cooler. And when we travel through communities, people are actually outside and not, you know, busy at work doing businesses and going about their way. Also, in terms of engaging with traffic, you're not dealing with people who are necessarily in a rush to get anywhere, so they're more patient with you as a large group of cyclists moving around the city.
And places like Watts Towers at night, are they lit up?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. Many people think that you can't really view architecture at night, but that might be the best time to view it because you can actually see it in a different way. Watts Towers itself is lit up at night and actually creates a very nice shadow effect. Sometimes we believe that there's no stars at night or no moonlight, but in Los Angeles you can actually see the moonlight affect building and cast shadows and provide views in ways that you'd never found possible during the day.
Now, on the sort of the dark side of the moon, as it were, some people hold reservations, even fears, about going to certain neighborhoods in town, and Watts might be one of those neighborhoods that some people are nervous about, whether justifiably or not. What do you say to that?
Along with most cycling and architecture, you have to look at things from another perspective. In terms of Watts, when we were planning the ride, we had a lot of questions from our riders. They were saying, is it safe? Have you made certain arrangements with groups of people down there? And our reply was, it's a family residential neighborhood. People actually spend their evenings on the front lawn with other neighbors. It's a lot safer than you think. And the best way to realize this is to actually go down there and enjoy it. And that's the whole point of Ride Arc and bicycling around Los Angeles.
Alex and Mary, thanks so much for talking to me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That was Alex Zameri, architecture graduate and founder of Ride Arc. You can find out more about Ride Arc on DNA's website. And for more about commuter cycling in Los Angeles, contact the Los Angeles County Bike Coalition. Details are also on our website. And to see some amazing inventiveness in bicycle design, check out Be Yikes, Eccentric Mobility. That's a show of unconventional bike designs from past and present. It's at Art Center College's Williamson Gallery through August 31. You're listening to DNA, broadcast on 89.9 KCRW and kcrw.com. I'm Frances Anderton. Coming up after this break, green roofs take root in Los Angeles and a new concert hall opens in Orange County.
Support for DNA comes from Design Within Reach, featuring modern designs including Herman Miller, Knoll, and Casina, all under one roof. 7 locations throughout the Southland area, including Beverly Hills, Santa Monica, Beverly Boulevard, Manhattan Beach, and Newport Beach.
This hot summer has prompted a lot of talk about the heat island effect, where asphalt and tarmac and dark roofs absorb the sun's heat and make cities hotter than nearby rural areas. Experts say that roofs and other surfaces should be painted white to reflect the sun. But some say you should go even further and cover our buildings with green roofs. Green roofs cool buildings by reflecting the heat and retaining water. And they're now being introduced to Los Angeles. Freya Bardell is an ecological designer. She heads the new LA branch of Rana Creek. That's the firm behind the green roofs for the famous Ford Rouge Center in Michigan and the new California Academy of Sciences in San Francisco. I asked Freya what's involved in creating a green roof.
There are several different types of green roofs. They're residential, to commercial to very, very large scale projects like the Academy of Sciences in Golden Gate Park. And if you wanted a residential green roof, a very important factor is you would have to see how much the roof can actually support, what type of weight. And a lot of residential buildings can support only extensive roofs.
The extensive roof being the thinner version, yeah, rather than the intensive roof, which is the sort of 2 foot of sod. So you'd really need to have quite a strong roof for that.
Yeah, definitely. And the sort of buildings that really you see intensive roofs on are more civic buildings or kind of large commercial buildings or a new construction where the client or the architect has decided that they do want to put an intensive roof on top of the building, and they've actually designed the building to structurally be able to support 60 pounds per square foot of weight, up to perhaps 120 pounds per square foot, and then they could have a tree growing on top of their rooftop, which would be pretty amazing on a residential house. Yeah.
And kind of wonderful and a bit weird. I mean, it must be almost surreal in a way to be, what, on a very high building and there's a tree on top of the building?
Yeah, I think it could be surreal. I think it could be wonderful for that to become not a surreal experience or vision and become something that was very common. What I would like to see is you'd look across at the mountains at the chaparral and see the chaparral basically weaving its way across rooftops to where I was standing, and know that those rooftops were supporting California wildlife, birds, butterflies, and creating these green corridors through cities.
What about water? How do you drain the water?
Well, that is definitely one of the first questions that I usually get asked when I consult on green roofs, is what about the water? People are terrified that their roofs are going to leak. And the systems that have been designed and have been used for probably around 50 years in Germany and Europe guarantee that their roofs won't leak. They use a membrane layer, which is the first layer and very important. And then on top of that, you have a root barrier layer, which prevents the roots from kind of penetrating through the membrane and into the roof, which is another fear and a question in people's minds. And then above that, you have a drainage layer. Above that drainage layer is filter fabric, and then you have your growing medium. The key is the membrane, the root barrier, a drainage layer, and your soil or your growing medium.
Now, with these green roofs, you've explained their sort of functional purpose, but could they be used like parks? I mean, could one go up onto one's green roof and play softball or just lie on the grass? Or are they usable, these green roofs?
Yeah, absolutely. It all depends on what you want. And there have been green roofs that have been made that have been football pitches, some that have had recreational uses. There's even been one green roof that was a golf course, which is something that I probably wouldn't have approved of myself.
So what about the cost of a green roof? Presumably they're more important. Are they more expensive than a conventional roof?
Yes, they are. But the benefits, I feel, outweigh that cost by a long, long way.
And you can reduce, if it works as you say it works, it can reduce your energy bills inside because you've got more thermal protect, more insulation from the roof.
Yeah, absolutely. It will reduce your energy use by cooling your house.
And cooling your house in summer, and would it help heat it in the winter because it would stop the heat from exiting the roof?
Yep, it has insulative properties that work both ways. Also, stormwater retention, it retains a lot of stormwater, and for new construction, a huge problem in Los Angeles right now is what to do with all the stormwater that's running across these impermeable surfaces and going into storm drains.
Got it. And what about getting all the materials, the soil and the plants, up onto the roof? How do you do it?
You can, if it's a residential, you can lug them up onto the top of the roof, but with larger constructions, if you're up 20 stories high, what you would usually do is use a crane and crane everything up onto the top of the roof, and then there's a machine that can blow the soil, like a big hose, fireman's hose, that will blow the soil across the entire roof.
So Freya, this is all really interesting. What brought you into this field? You know, excuse the pun.
I live in a very urban area, but my passion is really about nature and the spiritual connection and well-being that I feel when I go out into the Santa Monica Mountains. And the feeling of peace, I think, could be brought into the city and into an urban surrounding where it can be experienced by everybody. And I think that it would be amazing to see rooftops, which is virtually dead space, unused space, just become an extension of our natural habitat, and therefore we can regain perhaps a connection to nature that ultimately is a connection to place.
I've been talking with Freya Bardell. She's ecological designer for the firm Rana Creek that integrates nature with the man-made environment. Freya, it's such a delight to talk to you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Frances. This has been a pleasure.
Freya Bardell will give a hands-on workshop about installing a green roof at Materials and Applications on Silver Lake Boulevard on September 30th. See our website for details. And if you can get to San Francisco in September, Dwell Magazine is hosting a two-day conference and a three-day exhibit, and one of the speakers is Frank Escher. He's designer of the Dwell House 2, which has a green roof. That's Dwell on Design on the 15th and 16th of September, looking at architecture through the lens of prefab, sustainability, affordability, and urban design. Again, see our website for details. Next month, the René and Henry Segerstrom Concert Hall will open in Costa Mesa. Its architect is César Pelli. The Argentinian-born Pelli first made his mark as project designer for Aero Saarinen on the swooping TWA terminal at JFK. He later designed the Petronas Twin Towers in Kuala Lumpur, once credited as being the world's tallest building. In LA, he's best known for the Pacific Design Center, with its monolithic blue and green glass buildings that are highly dramatic when looked at from the outside. Segerstrom Concert Hall also has a dramatic, undulating glass wall, but there's an emphasis on the experience of the user inside the building, from the acoustic design of the hall, untested when I was there, and the theatrical quality of the lobby. I met César Pelli at the hall last month. Building was still going on, and to get away from the banging, we ended up talking in an unfinished men's room, where nonetheless the tall and debonair architect, famous for his charm, maintained his aplomb. I asked where he drew his inspiration.
It is very much in the tradition of 18th, 19th century European halls, but it's a very contemporary version of those halls. It is in Orange County, and the character of the hall, with a very large, very transparent northern wall of glass that waves, it captures, I believe, the character of Orange County. I think a very dynamic, progressive place, but with a more relaxed attitude than what you would find in the East Coast, for example. And it also, the waves or the glass, the interior waves in the balconies reflect the nature of the waves or the sound, but they also reflect the waves of the Pacific Ocean that is so nearby.
Being inside this building, we can look out and we can see an earlier building of yours here, one built 15 years ago called Plaza Tower. The glass is somewhat reflective. The glass of this building is a different animal. Tell us about this glass.
Well, we have taken advantage that most of the concert hall requires basically blank walls, and those face south, east, and west. The north wall, protected by nature from the direct rays of the sun, we could make it all glass. And here we are using a low iron glass that is without the normal green tint. It's a completely clear glass. And at the same time, it's a monolithic glass that can wave, and we don't need to have metal mullions vertically. So it's just, this is just only glass curved, waving from end to end, over 300 feet of wavy walls of glass.
but you wanted this super clear glass. You didn't want any tint. Why was that?
I wanted, when you are in the lobby, that you will feel that you are outdoors, that the glass will not be an impediment. You will see the blue of the sky, the green of the palm trees, very, very clearly, as if nothing was there. And at the same time, you will be very aware that there is this wall enclosing you. That one, glass acquires those magic qualities, so something that is there and it isn't there, and it contributes to a sense of excitement and beauty.
So the glass is a big feature, and another feature here that is different from some contemporary concert halls is that you've really made a feature of the lobby.
You're absolutely right, Frances. The lobby is ample, it has a very well-defined center, and at the level of the first balcony, the grand tier, it offers a promenade, a place that you can circulate around, and the ability to promenade is very simplistic, but is essential. It's a very basic component to create these public social interactions.
How do you feel as yet another of your buildings nears completion? Does it give you the same buzz that it did when you first started?
Well, I need to visit my buildings at least twice. The first time I come and look at my building, my eyes goes inevitably to all of the little things that are wrong. I can hardly see the total because I'm just consumed with all of the things that are wrong. And I take mental notes or I will write them in a pad of paper. But then afterwards, I can put that aside and I can start communing directly with the space that has been created, with the forms, the materials, and then very importantly, with the people using the building, because the people are a key element of my designs. I believe that architecture does not really come into being until it is well used, so that this building will be for me truly born on September 15th, where there will be the first performances and the first public will fill the hall. This will be a wonderful day for me.
Cesar Pelli, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frances. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
That was Cesar Pelli talking about the René and Henry Segerstrom Concert Hall that opens on September 15th. And you might be interested to know that the Red Building, the final piece in Cesar Pelli's vision for the Pacific Design Centre, is slated to start construction next year. And I'll finish today's show by mentioning just a few events around town that are closing soon. At the Prada store on Rodeo is Waist Down. That's a show of 100 skirts designed since 98 by the famous designer Miuccia Prada, whose name has become even more famous recently with the release of that marvellous film, The Devil Wears Prada. The show was designed by the think tank arm of Rem Koolhaas's Office for Metropolitan Architecture, which also designed the store. The show closes on August 27th. It's well worth seeing because it's a highly inventive show. Also closing on August 27th is the Southern California Home and Garden Show. In addition to the latest in landscaping and drought-tolerant gardens, they're showing some inflatable housing prototypes designed at SciArc, conceptual housing by the artist and designer Greg Fleischman, and a number of other art installations. That's at Anaheim Convention Center. And in the other direction, in Pasadena, you can see Dialogues and Interventions. That's a show of recent architecture in the Pasadena area by some of LA's most thoughtful architects. It's on at the Armory Center for the Arts until September 3rd. For these and other current design events, see the calendar on our website on kcrw.com, keywords design and architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. Thanks very much for listening to today's show. It was produced by Jennifer Ferro and Ray Guana, with production assistance from Melissa Walker. And thanks to Nan Sherry Lieberman for managing the website. You can listen to this show or past shows anytime by going to kcrw.com, again, keywords, design and architecture, and you can podcast the show on our website or iTunes. And if you want to comment on design and architecture, write me at DNA, that's the letters, DNA, at kcrw.org. And don't forget to join me again next month for more DNA.
You've been listening to KCRW's DNA. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including Politics of Culture, an examination of the intersection of political issues and cultural trends, featuring interviews with leading figures in media, politics, the arts, and entertainment. Check out the podcast of Politics of Culture at kcrw.com.